This edition of the week is sponsored by Invitrogen. Gibco Cell Culture products now feature easy-to-read, color-coded, and writable labels that are easy to find. Take a closer look at www.invitrogen.com/labels. Welcome to The Week, the weekly news podcast from The Scientist. This week, senior editor Brendan Marr speaks with William Brown about sex signals on the dance floor. Brown designed a test that measures how well dancing ability correlates with the visual cue of fluctuating asymmetry. Some evolutionary biologists consider the cue a measure of a mate's quality. Over 1,200 of our readers took a version of Brown's test on our website. And Brown and Marr break down the results and discuss how smooth moves can indicate a desirable mate. You can read more about the science behind seduction in the September issue of The Scientist and at www.thescientist.com. First, staff writer Carrie Grins has a roundup from The Scientist Daily News.
A former vice president at Decode Genetics has taken the stand in a lawsuit brought against him by the company. The Icelandic biotech alleges that former VP Håkan Håkanarsson and three other employees stole thousands of computer files to use at the Center for Applied Genetics at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, where Håkanarsson is now director. In ongoing coverage from the courtroom, Susan Warner writes that Håkanarsson testified that secrecy on the part of the company CEO had killed relationships with other firms. Håkanarsson said he became alarmed earlier this year when he saw other biotechs forming partnerships, even though he felt Decode had a superior pipeline. Håkanarsson also testified that he removed files about gene chip equipment from a Decode computer after he was asked to resign. The company is seeking an injunction on employment contracts to prevent its former scientists from working at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia for 2 years. The trial is scheduled to continue in November, but you can read previous coverage of the trial and stay updated as the case moves forward on our website. In research news, Jeffrey Perkel reports on our website that Italian researchers have identified a new sex determination gene. The scientists report in Nature that loss of the mitogen, R-spondin 1, in humans resulted in XX males. The R-spondin 1 gene is the first to be implicated as an ovary-promoting factor, though for some time scientists had suspected such a factor existed. In a genetic analysis of four XX brothers and one unrelated XX male, Giovanna Camerino of the University of Pavia found a single base insertion in the gene for R-spondin 1. Robin Lovell Badge from the MRC National Institute for Medical Research in London calls the study, quote, a beautiful piece of genetic detective work. In normal males, the Y chromosome gene, SRY, activates expression of the testes promoting factor SOX9. Lovell Badge said R-spondin 1 might be involved in turning off SOX9 in the developing ovary. He says the next step will be to manipulate the RSPO1 protein in mice to tease out its interactions with SOX9 and other sex development genes. This month, the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences named UC Berkeley biologist Randy Scheckman as its new editor-in-chief. Scheckman already has plans for the role, including bringing in longer papers to the journal. He says PNAS articles tend to be on the short side, and, quote, sometimes it takes longer than 6 pages to fully develop a story. He also aims to create new cross-disciplinary initiatives like the Sustainability Science section, developed by his predecessor, Nicholas Cozzarelli. In March, Cozzarelli died of Burkitt's lymphoma. Scheckman has had editorial roles at the Journal of Cell Biology, Molecular Biology of the Cell, and the Annual Review of Cell and Developmental Biology. His tenure at PNAS runs through 2010. You can read full reports from The Scientist Daily News on our website, www.thescientist.com. Now, senior editor Brendan Marr speaks with William Brown about sizing up a mate's moves.
Among the many cues humans use to choose the perfect mate is the way a potential lover moves on the dance floor. William Brown studies behavioral ecology and evolutionary psychology at Brunel University's Center for Cognition and Neuroimaging. Early this year, with a group of evolutionary biologists and motion capture specialists, he assessed how people rate dancers moving in tune to a pop song in Jamaica. This was done in concert with the ongoing Jamaican Symmetry Project, which has measured fluctuating asymmetry in a population of Jamaican youths over a number of years. Brown's paper in Nature, they were able to see how well those ratings correlated to the dancer's fluctuating asymmetry, long considered an indicator of mate quality. Last month, we had the readers of The Scientist and visitors to our website take a simplified version of the test. We had more than 1,200 responses in the month of September, almost 700 males and 550 females. And now, William Brown is here to talk with us about the results of our unofficial poll. So, how well did our readers' rankings correlate with body symmetry in the dancers?
I think they were okay, not quite as good as what we found in Jamaica. Granted, it was a different kind of study. Young people in Jamaica rated the entire dance from beginning to end on a large theater, home theater screen, so they got to see a lot of information, whereas just due to a variety of reasons, we had just snippets for the Scientist magazine, so people actually didn't get to see the whole dance from beginning to end. But overall, it seems that there was a slight preference for symmetrical individuals, at least the dances of symmetrical individuals. We had the three symmetrical individuals and three asymmetrical individuals, and there was a slight bias, about three out of a scale of five for symmetrical individuals, whereas the asymmetrical individuals did fairly well as well. They did quite well. They got around about a 2.7 out of five. So like I say, there's a very slight difference there that I guess would be consistent with what we found in Jamaica, but in Jamaica we found a much stronger effect.
And of course, it's pretty hard to show that these are significant results in this format. How else did the experience for our readers differ from the participants in the real project?
Well, it's much easier for your readers, except for the fact that they were just rating it on their computer screen and they didn't see the whole dance from beginning to end. But I do think that would have been less of a cognitive burden because there really only were six short snippets. Whereas in the Jamaican study, in retrospect, we probably gave them too much to evaluate. We had 40 full dances evaluated so this is dances to the exact same song, and which got particularly tedious, I think, after a while. So in retrospect, we probably gave too many for one group of participants to evaluate, that is 40 dancers.
So was guessing the sex of the dancing avatars, was that part of your original study?
Yes, we looked at that in the Nature paper. A very good reviewer mentioned when they were evaluating our paper, they suggested that, you know, there could be some sort of bias depending if you detect the sex of the dancer, which we know that people from point light displays of people walking or facial movements may be able to detect the sex of the individual just from the movements themselves. So it was possible that the dances were revealing the sex of the dancer, and people had some sort of maybe could be a socially learned stereotype that women are better dancers or men are better dancers. If that could maybe bias the ratings. So as a result, we did actually ask people whether they thought it was a male dancer or female dancer. And what we did find in the Nature paper was, irregardless of your ability to detect sex, which actually turned out not to be that great, people were about 60% accurate, with females being better detectors of sex than males. Regardless of whether they were accurate, though, there was still an association between symmetry and dance quality. In the online poll from the Scientist magazine, we see that people are very much within the range of detecting sex of the dancer, probably around an average of a little bit over 60, maybe 64%. Some dancers, they were better than others, quite high. In fact, I think dancer one was about 87% accurate at detecting sex. So
yeah, and he was a symmetric male, right?
Yeah, and they were very accurate there. So I was surprised at how high that was. But generally, for the other dancers, it appeared to be lower, more within the range, I think, of what we found in Jamaica.
So where has your research taken you since? Kind of what's new on the horizon? Are you following up on this project in any way?
Well, most definitely. I think it was a powerful finding, and really the methodology itself, who, you know, I must give credit to Professor Lee Kronk, anthropologist at Rutgers University, to have the foresight to use this methodology to separate the dance phenotype from the phenotype of the dancer. One of the reasons you'd want to do that is because people's evaluations could be biased by how someone's hair is, their facial attractiveness. Perhaps if you were a little chubby, you might get a lower rating. So by removing all that other information, we can actually just focus on the movements themselves. And this, it's such a general methodology, elegant methodology, we can use it for a variety of things. So right now, we're quite interested in facial expressions of honesty and trust and basically another form of cooperative partner choice. So not just selecting a mate, but perhaps selecting a best friend or selecting an ally. And what are maybe some of the facial and bodily movements that may best predict someone who can be trusted? So we can work. I'm doing some of this work with my collaborators at Rutgers at the Center for Human Evolutionary Studies, but also here at Brunel, there's a computer engineer by the name of Dr. Jensheng Kang, a motion capture expert, and him and I are currently working on improved methods for not only measuring body movements during dance, facial expression, or maybe when someone's helping another, but we're also investigating 3D imaging technology to get more accurate measures of these static, subtle, fluctuating asymmetries. Rather than maybe the heavy reliance on digital calipers, we may be able to find a more efficient way of doing the measurements using imaging technology that we have here. We have a full 3D body scanner that is very accurate in measuring all sorts of body traits. So again, we're definitely continuing to look at the relationships between people's static morphology, such as maybe symmetry and perhaps other factors like waist-to-hip ratio, and how that may be associated with your movements or perhaps cooperative behavior.
You mentioned specific movement isolation like facial movements. I mean, how do you kind of work that out technically where you're still kind of masking some of the overarching features of a person's face?
Well, just like the motion capture technology that we used in Jamaica, there were 41 markers placed on the human body during these dances, and the 8 cameras emitted an infrared beam that bounced off the reflector and back into the cameras, and it was the movement of each one of these 41 reflectors around the human body were then stored mathematically in the computer. Then we can actually analyze. There's movement parameters that people interested in biological motion that investigate. They look at something called Euler joint angles, which is the actual angles of the joints frame by frame. So I've been doing some of the most time-consuming work that I've been doing since I moved to London here at Brunel University is trying to look at the joint angle variability for the best dancers, the individuals that are the best dancers, and also the most symmetrical individuals. Is symmetry of the body also associated with this flexible, varied movement that is a good predictor of your dance quality? So this is a more fine-grained analysis of the specific movements that maybe signal symmetry in men or signal symmetry in women. And this is the interesting thing we have found, which kind of relates to the sex detection idea, is that there are different movements that are prototypical for in Jamaica for a really good male dancer versus a really good female dancer. And the movements, specific movements that predict male symmetry are different than the movements that predict female symmetry.
Very interesting. So how does this whole picture kind of come together into a big, our future was on mate choice. I mean, how do these multiple equations kind of work back into, you know, true love, as it were?
Well, that's a big question. I think that we plan to start, one of the reasons we're getting interested in cooperative partner choice. So if you think about what we were doing in Jamaica was individuals' evaluations of others' dances. And in dance is often associated with courtship and perhaps sexual selection in a variety of species, including humans. But we're also interested in people's like evaluations of long-term romantic partners. You can make a distinction between a short-term romantic partner, perhaps based on, could be very short, it could be just as long, enough time to copulate, whereas a long-term partner, like a marriage partner, a trusted partner, could be extremely important as well. So I think the future for us is to try to look at these movements and isolate the ones that are most related to these different attributes, whether it could be mate quality in one situation in the short-term attractiveness preference types of experiments, or other features like waist-to-hip ratio, perhaps aspects of masculinity. Now, when it comes to the long-term time frame, perhaps choosing a long-term partner, you may expect different cues to become more important, and maybe some facial movements that are indicative of trust that maybe are very difficult for, let's say, cheaters to fake, because there could be good reasons why someone may not want to have a long-term partnership with someone who can't be trusted. For example, slandering could be a potential adaptive hazard, I think, at least in ancestral environments, probably even today. I really do love the motion capture technology, because we may be able to isolate conglomerations of actual facial movements and bodily movements that are predictive of someone's likelihood to cooperate. And that could be important for mate selection as well.
Well, I want to thank you for taking some time to talk with us today.
Oh, well, thank you very much for speaking with me.
This has been Will Brown at Brunel University's Center for Cognition and Neuroimaging, and I'm Brendan Maher for The Scientist.
Thank you for tuning in to The Week. Visit our website for features from The Scientist, daily news articles, and blogs from our editors. You can also post your comments at www.thescientist.com. This edition of The Week was brought to you by Invitrogen. Gibco cell culture products now feature easy-to-read, color-coded, and writable labels that are easy to find. Take a closer look at www.invitrogen.com/labels.